This is the September 22nd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Gender of FC Stone. He's from Chesterfield, Missouri. Jared Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Bryce Knorr from Farm Futures, also from Chicago. And Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. And right now, we're in the midst of a very quiet fall fund drive. In fact, a small group of existing friends have donated an extra gift just to encourage your support, matching any gift made right now, dollar for dollar. So double our money with your money. You can do that at 217-244-0025. Or at willpledge.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Well, let's begin our discussion, as usual, with a list of questions to talk about. We'll start with you, Brian Stark, of the Andersons.
I think the biggest one for us is record bean yields versus record bean demand. Similar strong demand in corn, maybe a little bit disappointing yields relative to 2014 thus far.
Greg Gender?
Yeah, I'd have to echo the same thing. That seems to be what is on everybody's, the top of everybody's list is the corn crop as big as what the government has posted, and is the bean number smaller than what it really is?
Jerry Golke of the Golke Group.
Well, I think the thing we want to be careful of is that we don't just focus on the what's in our back door on U.S. Yields and carryovers and disregard the global situation. And, you know, that was a lot of the problem last spring going forward, because we were looking at what was supposed to be big yields and, big stocks in U.S. And they were paled in comparison in beans, especially to the global stocks. So I'm watching global demand to see how we go from here.
And finally, Bryce Knorr of Farm Futures.
Yeah, I'd echo what everybody said. First of all, how big are these crops? And secondly, what's happening around the world, not only down in South America with what farmers are going to plant there, but what's happening with the outside markets? Are we going to get some sort of black swan event here that disrupts our commodity markets going into winter?
Okay, I'd like to start with you, Jerry, and take up this global side of the stock market. What did USDA tell us last month, actually this month in September, and how do you put that into contrast with what's happening in the United States?
Well, if you look at the that report, we gained, I think it was 141 million bushels in beans, but our carryover only went up about 30-some million. And we ate up a lot of some of that in, of course, expanded demand and also in less carry-in from last year's, I would say, grossly understated demand side of the soybean market compared to what we would have said maybe a year ago, or what some said. I think Informa and some of the others were 450 million bushels of beans by the end of August 2016, and it didn't happen. So I think there lies the situation. So did USDA kind of cut back a little bit on what they think the demand is really going to be in these beans, so as to not to get the carryover too low. And what they can do is, if this crop is 52 bushels an acre, they could raise demand and absorb some of that as well. And I think if you look at our carryover compared to the global stock or global usage, we're about 2 or 3% of the global stocks in our hands. So that's very little room for a problem in South America or a surprise increase in demand by not just China. They're about half the demand, but what about all the other countries that seem to be using a little bit more of everything? So I think there's some exciting times left in soybeans, maybe in the end of the first part of the year.
Fair to make the case then from you that you're thinking, despite the size of the soybean crop in the United States, there could be a pretty good size move upward left in this marketplace?
Yeah, I think so. I've always thought from day one last spring when I made the decision to plant beans that I thought whatever the low would be this fall, we could get a dollar better than that at some point in time. So I would think that we're not out of the realm of possibility to see $11 soybeans again. And but it takes some things, you know, some dominoes got to fall. And of course, if we come up with two more bushels an acre for some reason, I don't think it's there. But you know, that's 160 million bushels. That might damper thoughts until we actually got a crop problem. But you can tell the in South America, but you can tell the trade is kind of already looking at South America, and it isn't December. You know, it's early on, so it's going to be very touchy, I think, out there. And there's that's the caveat that I've got left. I think I've told my clients that we want to have about 40% of our beans bought back or at our disposal in the grain bin or whatever to absorb an upside potential and go from there. I don't think I want to dump them all, you know, even if they're hedged. I don't think I want to give up beneficial interest just yet.
Just as a side note, if you'd like to see some of these numbers, you can do that on our website at willag.org. Look for the USDA reports page link. And the numbers, while they're released from the United States Department of Agriculture in million metric tons, are posted in both million metric tons and bushels. And the changes are in both. And depending on whether we happen to be looking at the world supply and demand figures or in the production figures as well. Okay, so Bryce Knorr, I want to come to you because you're thinking there might be a black swan event out there for soybeans. Is this on the opposite side of the marketplace for you?
Well, no, the trouble with black swan events is that by definition, you can't predict them. So it makes it tough to say, you know, what it might be or when it might come. In terms of the soybeans, I agree with Jerry. I think USDA has underestimated Chinese demand particularly. They actually lowered their estimate for 2016 Chinese imports in the September report. They underestimated demand last year. They started out in May of 2015 with 500 million bushels of carryout for the 2015 soybean crop. That was down to 195 in their last report. So I think that same situation could be setting up this year. But again, it's going to depend on the world economy staying on track, the Chinese economy staying on track. Now, so far, their government has been able to at least keep things from slipping backwards through a combination of fiscal stimulus and spending. Also, the People's Bank of China has continued to devalue the yuan, so that's helping their exports. So China at least is treading water for now. But when you look at a lot of these markets, they're really range-bound, whether it's the dollar or crude oil, some of the other markets, just kind of waiting to see what happens here and to see where the money is going to go. If the funds decide to get back into commodities, particularly after the Federal Reserve's action yesterday, or at least on Wednesday, that means that there's going to be a lot of money sloshing around. Some of it may spill over into agriculture.
Hey, can I ask you one follow-up question very quickly, Bryce, about the carryover in the United States? Certainly the May supply and demand figure showed a very large carryover for this marketing year and for the one we just finished as well. That was substantially changed based on yields out of South America and weather conditions that didn't really develop until the end of the season. Can you really faithfully think that something like that will happen again this coming year? Is there that much of a change in possibility? Because it didn't appear to be a demand-driven function, that it was a supply-driven function in the change.
Well, it was really a combination of things. First of all, because of USDA's track record of underestimating the demand, particularly, that tends to build from year to year. So you start off with really large beginning stocks, and those get whittled down. And we've seen that happen for the 2016 crop. Now, the U.S. crop appears to be pretty big, may not be quite as big as some people think. The yields may be a little lower. That could be offset by increased acres. The FSA Farm Program Certifications data seems to hint that maybe we'll gain 750,000 to 1 million acres of soybeans when all is said and done in terms of the acreage. But it doesn't take much of a reduction supply here or perhaps out of South America, as well as an increase in demand to start knocking down that carryout number. And we've seen it take some pretty big hits. Now, we know that the South American growers will be, at least some of them, are going to be planting more corn. They'll also be planting more soybeans in Brazil, maybe not as many as originally thought. The center west area, they're still going to be growing a lot of first crop beans, but some of the growers to the south in Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, may well plant more first crop corn.
Brian Stark, this is in the area you wanted to talk about, soybean yields versus record bean demand. How do you view the supply and demand situation? And does that tally with what you're finding on the ground in East Central Illinois and hearing from the other Anderson elevators across the Corn Belt?
Yeah, I think it ties in pretty well so far. Mind you, we're just getting a good start on bean harvest in East Central Illinois, but the early bean yields in our facilities in Indiana are seeing 70 bushel to 80 bushel beans at times. So the yields have been outstanding, even though it's an early call to make that assessment. You know, just thinking about, you know, if the government would be deemed to be light at 50.6 on a national scale, just to think of what each state would have to do to even raise that bushel figure, another bushel and a half. You know, you're talking about Illinois pegged at 61, which is 5 bushel above its record. You know, they're going to probably have to go up another couple bushels. Iowa at 58 versus their record at 56.5, potentially having to go up even higher than that. So just to think about that, just to move it to a 52 bushel scale to give us some comfortability with the strong demand base that has been growing ever since those end of the season issues that South America had is a tall task. And I think that's what the market is tend to focus on right now is a supply base. I think eventually when you get outside of harvest, demand's going to continue to be there. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw another event where we underestimated bean demand here long term. And I can't disagree with what Jerry said. I've been in the camp all along that, you know, had they printed that carryout of 195 earlier, we'd still beat $11 beans. And I think at some point in time, you could gradually work back that way. So we've been very patient with beans. I think the tough part for the farmer when he's trying to make his storage decisions is there's not a lot of carry in soybeans. And so they're inclined to sell beans across the scale or market them and try and store their corn, given the amount of carry that corn has relative to the bean complex. If they choose to do so, we've been encouraging them to maintain some sort of long ownership through the South America growing season via the long call. So I think that's kind of been our focus here in the short term.
And Greg Ginder, you're there near the confluence of the Mississippi and Illinois rivers. You should have a pretty good handle on demand, I would think. You used to work in that part of the industry for the exports. What are you hearing from the barge traffic?
Well, right now, everybody's just kind of waiting to see when this tidal wave of grain is going to hit the market with the weather forecast the way that has been the last, the last week, and looking forward for another 3 or 4 days into the weekend. It looks like there's going to be a pretty big run. So I think everybody's kind of backed away a little bit and wait and see mode. It's interesting to talk to some of the shippers to kind of see what kind of runs they've had right now, and they're running probably about half of what they would consider to be busy days. So the CIF market is kind of, it's a little soft. It has been the Gulf prices have been kind of back and forth, specifically on corn. Beans have remained somewhat steady, given that there's still probably 2 weeks or maybe a touch more, depending on weather, if we're going to see the beans hit the market on the river. But yeah, corn, there's quite a bit of corn that's in Memphis or has come out of the Memphis and South area, Cairo and South. There's some damage issues. There's a touch of aflatoxin issues. You know, so there is a demand for clean number two. And right now they are just kind of they're just kind of waiting to see. I've seen some really good DP programs on corn. There's a real big push to get the first origination, some of these wetter bushels that they can get in, dry down, and put on a barge and ship off for blend. So for right now, the basis levels have stayed fairly steady, a little soft, but no worse. No worse for the wear, considering that we're right on the cusp of full-blown harvest all over. So it is kind of a weaker basis market, or it could very well end up that way.
Jerry Gulke, earlier in the year, producers were told they sold their old crop soybeans way ahead of time, and that many traders were thinking that was the right move. That would have been in the March-April time frame. Turned out not to be the case. Now they're selling their new crop soybeans, a lot of them across the scale, maybe have marketed some of them ahead of time. Is that a good decision?
Well, I don't think so. And I think, with this business of marketing comes age, and I think most of us in our panel now have been around long enough to know maybe a little bit more than the younger guys who probably started this business 10 to 15 years ago. And I think that it always seems to be when the market wants it the most, we used to say that's when you want to give it to them. But in this situation, I'm not so sure. I'd be more inclined, I think, to multiply my bushels in corn times price. And that gives me the growth, which may not be all that much different than if we'd have had less of a yield and a different price. So we've sold enough to cover our cash flow, and I'd like to hold everything for seasonally a harvest bounce. And in corn, I doubt that it lasts much longer than January, but in soybeans, that could last well into the beginning of the year, because we really are the only place around to buy beans from. And as I understand, like the rest of the folks are saying, that the end users are short bought. Maybe they need to cover some more of them. And I think beans are good property. I kind of always had the analysis or the idea that to make my schedule less look as bad as I could, I'd probably hold the one that held the most volume and price, and that's soybean, and get your schedule left down to where it looks like you're broke even, and maybe the government will have a bleeding heart for us or something down the way. But I have a tendency to hold the beans, and I want to hold some corn as well for probably, if you look at the corn chart, if we can get above that September 12th high, which is not too far away, but it could be a struggle, maybe we do that in March. And if we do that in March, that'll be an indication that that South America is in the midst of maybe not having as good a corn crop as everybody thinks. So I like, not that I'm a contrarian, but I'm a little more financially looking at it. And I want to hold something that's going to have the possibility of having a 15% return on investment if I put it in the bin. I'm going to hold the beans. I told clients that we want to look at maybe if we have to sell another 10% and that are hedged, we'll just look to hedge and sell the beans. But the rest of them, I kind of want to have some upside protection. And I'm not fond of selling the cash and buying the calls because they cost so much. I'm kind of spotting the market quite a bit of money, especially in corn. You've got a carry already. So what do? Sell the cash and buy a March call? Or do you buy a May call? Or do you buy a July? And pretty soon you've got to see the market rally 40 cents. Before you made any money in those calls. And I look at it and saying, is there anything out there that should make corn go up more than 40 cents? And I have a hard time finding that unless there's a problem in South America. And so now you're all of a sudden paying somebody for those calls who bought your grain pretty cheap and now selling you the right to re-own it. And doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless you have a different perspective.
Bryce Dorn, your thoughts on marketing the crop across the scale or whether you want to hold it? Both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I like owning beans, but since most fellows probably going to be short on storage, I like owning the beans on paper. My research indicates that you can make just about as much money on paper as you can by holding them in the bin, particularly long term. With the corn, it looks like the basis is starting to weaken. And we're going to get to probably weak, typically weak basis, much weaker than we got last year due to the larger crop. The carry isn't as great as we used to get a few years ago, but you still got 24 cents or so. So I think getting a little bit of a post-harvest bounce in that corn crop and doing some storage hedges probably will be a good idea. for at least part of the crop. And the other thing, of course, is to start looking at that potential ARC payment for 2016. Add that into your cash flow because it may ameliorate some of the financial stress that fellows are feeling right now.
And Brian Stark, given the fact that you're really in the business of trying to fill the elevator and empty it out as many times as you possibly can, what are your thoughts here on this marketing of the crop?
Well, obviously, we like handling corn because that's got the biggest opportunity for carry from a versus a bean perspective. And I think from the producer level, I think space is going to be in short supply, so they're going to have to move something to town. And I agree with Bryce. I mean, I think, you know, I just don't like encouraging guys to pay DP charges. I mean, a basis contract is potentially something that they could look at if they want to stay long the cash rather than replace the ownership in paper. But from a corn perspective, I think back to 2 years ago, and given the fact that I'm in the cash grain business, you know, I think one of the things the farmer has to realize when he's holding the bin is knowing the timing of when to take advantage of the carry, because it's not all about futures, especially if their grain is unpriced. There's opportunity to capture it in the basis, and I've seen over many years where harvest ends off a big crop and they're unsatisfied with a cash price and they lock the bin, shut the doors. Well, the end user, the only way to generate movement when prices are this cheap is through the basis. And so I fully suspect basis could have a big snapback once harvest gets over, whether it's the end of October or begin November in the Eastern Corn Belt. And I think that's an opportunity where we have to look and say, let's not wait for a JFM type movement, ship it where the ethanol or processor is needing it, maybe in last half November or December, and there might be just as a big of a bang for putting it in for 30 days as there is sitting and holding it till July. So that's kind of been what we've been pushing.
Yeah, can you tell me about the difference between 2 years, say, the difference between 2014 and 2015 and the way basis reacted?
Well, I think in 2015, when you look at compared to 2014, we had a record-breaking crop in 2014. 2015 wasn't bad, but the difference between the 2 years had to do with a lot of short crop in Indiana, Ohio, east of Illinois. We were down a little bit from the record-breaking crop size from 14 to 15 in looking east central Illinois area, but the main cog of Eastern Corn Belt was nervous about the short or half crop Indiana had in 15, and so you saw massive basis appreciation in a week's time, the third week of October last year, relative to maybe a more gradual appreciation or elevation coming off the big record crop in 14. So I don't know if we'll see such a big move this year because the crop seems to be pretty good in Indiana. Ohio is a little suspect, but I still think you'll see a decent move in basis once the producer locks his doors to his bin.
Greg Ginder, your thoughts on marketing the crop?
I'm going to be one of those guys that's going to stay along the grain this year. Sell what you need to pay your bills. I think beans have a potential of $11, like Mr. Golke said. I'm fairly bullish on corn, given everything that's going on in the Brazilian sugar market, with the sugar ethanol and corn ethanol possibly working its way into some of those markets in the Caribbean and in the Asian European market. So I'm friendly all the way around. I would do paper reownership. You know, basis might get a little bit squirrely, but I think overall, I think we're going to be looking at better numbers next year than we are today.
Oh, much better. And I'm surprised that all four of you are all in this boat. This really strikes me as odd at this point. So how much more appreciation? And maybe, Greg, I'll start with you.
I certainly believe, as far as corn goes, I think we can put a four handle back on this thing and then, you know, take a look around and see what the macros look like from there. But I certainly won't rule that out whatsoever. On beans, the $11 number, I think, strikes me pretty good. I mean, there's a huge appetite for protein in the world. You have this palm oil issue in Southeast Asia, where bean oil is starting to smooth over the cracks left behind by the shortfall crop over there. Argentina, Brazil, you don't quite know what their crop's going to look like yet because they're just starting to get moving. I think there's definitely room for improvement. I think it's I think it's a good time to be long in one way, shape, or form.
So I think everybody's at 11 handle on the soybean. So let's find out the rest of you on corn on this one. And we'll start with Brian Stark.
I think I look back to the market and what it did off its record-breaking crop in 2014. I think we set our low around the beginning of October in the low $3 area, and then subsequently coming off a big crop, talking about basis and appreciation, the board actually rallied into the 380s by early November. So I don't know if I'm necessarily in the $4 camp, but I certainly think we can get back to the upper threes at some point.
Bryce Knorr?
The top end of my current price model for 2016 crop is $3.95 or so. So I think there's potentially close to four. Whether we get higher, I think it's going to take almost a rally to start buying soybean acres to lift corn up much more than that.
And Jerry Gahlke.
Well, I kind of agree with everybody out there, and I have a tendency to more look at the trend and where it's headed. I probably don't know how high it's going to go, but I think I know where it isn't going to go, and I don't think we're going to make new lows for the year. If we do, it's going to be very short-term, kind of like we did in 14 on October 1st, and then reverse with a V-bottom of some sort. But I think one of the things we may be missing again is the ability for this farmer to hold grain off the market. And I know we have clients that, farm 10,000 acres, said not one bushel is going to town. They're going to put it in bags. They're going to just hold it. And if we do that, I think then the basis appreciates. And then if you get any kind of a rally in corn, I think anything above 370, 380 in March corn, then you got to start looking at the carry. And if it's still as good as it is today, then you can pencil in some things and it looks pretty good. And maybe use your on-farm storage like an elevator does, be a small elevator and have that mindset rather than, in a business standpoint, rather than a mindset of a farmer. And I think with ARC payments, they've been pretty good. And farmers had money left from last year. So we hear about the bad things out there where somebody's going broke or in receivership. But I think generally speaking, we probably have better holding power, at least in the short run, than what the trade would like to think, and especially those that have to buy from us. Either way, you're going to have to move 4 billion bushels of beans this year, close to it. And you also have to come up with buying almost 15 billion bushels of corn. You've got to get it out of the farmer's hands somehow. And I don't think a cheap price is going to do that.
One more question, and then we'll get a wrap-up from each of you. I want to talk a little bit about the grain stocks report due out Friday of next week on the 30th day of September. Are there expectations for that grain stocks report to put any surprises into the market based off ethanol usage and or wheat feeding in the livestock sector? And I think, Bryce Knorr, I'll have you answer that one for me.
Well, the ethanol numbers are pretty easy to forecast, so I don't think we'll get much of a surprise there. USDA looks pretty close with their current number. The feed usage number is always the big question, particularly with the cheap feed wheat. I think if we get any sort of a bearish surprise in corn, it could be due to fairly weak feed usage during the summer quarter.
And wheat generally is used a surprising number of bushels during the summer quarter. USDA should be aware of that, although it wouldn't show up until this quarter, I suppose. Jerry Gahlke, is that a concern you would have?
Yeah, I think so. We've heard about a lot of wheat feeding out there. And, of course, USDA does have a lot of wheat feeding in their future outlook for wheat. Can we come up with another 50 or 100 million bushels of feed wheat and at the expense of feed corn? I don't know. And again, when you're looking at the carryover, whether it's 2.2 or 2.4 or 2.5, probably at the end of September, another million or 100 million bushels here or there doesn't mean a whole lot. I'd be more concerned about maybe soybeans, that stock's dropping a little bit. And I think here again, it's going to be the ability to drag this harvest out either through on-farm storage and they don't market as much, or we get into this weather thing to where we have an orderly transition from the field to the bins, and there isn't that glut that comes. And the way it looks now, maybe that's in our favor to see some wet weather come to drag this thing out. So I don't see the glut coming from the farmer's standpoint. We've been wrong about that, anticipating that for the last 3 or 4 years. And somehow we found a home for this stuff, and I think we're pretty resilient in putting this stuff away. And then what are you going to have to pay for it to get it out of our hands until March 1st, the rent comes around, and we have to go to the banker and renegotiate our loans and so forth. So there's about 6 months in there, and 3 or 4 months rather, that's going to be kind of interesting to see how the world develops.
Let's wrap up our discussion. We'll get a final word from each of you, and we'll start with Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County.
I'd just like to tell all our listeners and farmers to make sure that you have a safe harvest as we get ramped up here, and make sure you're always being safe in all your activities.
Bryce Knorr of Farm Futures out of Chicago, Illinois.
Well, while you're waiting in line at the elevator or unloading corn, start penciling out your bottom line. I think growers who hedged at the summer rally are going to be pleasantly surprised, that particularly in soybeans. They may have a real good shot at a profitable price this year.
Greg Ginder of FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri.
The first corn that was planted obviously has come in a little bit under expectations, but we're looking to see what these later planted corn crops look like, especially keep your eyes on the Iowa and the southern Minnesota area.
And finally, Jerry Golke of the Golke Group.
Yes, you know, I've been one of those that didn't really believe that 175 bushel deal in corn. But now that we're getting results back in, what I'm not finding is a disaster area anywhere. You know, we're not seeing a huge yield, you know, the 280s and 300s, but a lot of 220s, 240s, 250s. And very few guys are coming in with something under 150. Even Michigan and Ohio areas where we knew that was bad, we expected that to be pretty bad. And it's not real bad. So the surprise might be that the low end not being as bad as normal brings up the rising tide lifts all the ships, and we do end up with 172, 173 bushels of corn. And that's pretty heavy weighted. That, along with a billion bushels of wheat, is a big mound of grain to get rid of, and only a crop production problem somewhere in the globe that will solve that. And we got to keep that in mind as we rally. What's a reasonable price and what's overpriced? And I would think anything near $4 is going to bring a lot of corn into production next fall again. I know a lot of guys that will say, if I get a shot of hedging $4 corn in December or even March of 2018, I'm going to do that. And so I think we plant corn next year and won't reduce the acres near as much as most people think.
You've been listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and listen to the entirety of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our panelists this week have included Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago, Illinois, Bryce Knorr of Farm Futures from Chicago, Brian Stark of the Andersons from here in Champaign County, Illinois, and Greg Ginder of FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.